Hello, I'm Robert Rickover. I'm an Alexander Technique teacher in Omaha, Nebraska. And my guest today is Amanda Cole, who lives in Brisbane, Australia. And she is an Australian academic researcher, writer, and performer. And she wrote a book. Was the author of a book called Marjorie Barstow and the Alexander Technique, Critical Thinking in Performance Art Pedagogy. And I'll just hold that up for everyone to see. I highly recommend this book. You can get it on Amazon. She has won numerous awards for creative projects, research projects, and professional development. She has a doctorate in performing arts pedagogy from Griffith University and a master's of music performance from the University of Melbourne. And she is also a long-time student of both classic and Barstow-inspired versions of the Alexander Technique. For this book, she drew on multiple sources, including a significant collection of written correspondence between F.M. Alexander, Marjorie Barstow, Frank Pierce Jones, and Professor John Dewey that provides a new and very different perspective on the history of the Alexander Technique, I would say from the 40s maybe into the 70s kind of time period. And we've done five previous interviews on various aspects of the book, but I think this will probably be the final interview in our series. And the question that I wanted to ask you, Amanda, after all of our conversations and after you wrote the book and I read the book and some Alexander teachers have read the book, and is, first of all, you obviously care very deeply about the Alexander Technique, and because I don't think you would have written this book otherwise. And my question is, what do you see as the usefulness of your research for Alexander Technique teachers and students today? We're speaking in 2013, mid-July, summer where I am, winter where you are. I can see you always have more heavy stuff on than I do.
It's winter. You've left it out a decade. I think it's 2023.
2023. I'm sorry, I may have said the wrong time. We are in 2023, mid-July.
Anyway, so that's a great question. And I was thinking, yes, I care really deeply about the Alexander technique. I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that I think I care even more about education. And so, because I care about that means that I care about how the Alexander technique is taught. And I think that's what really has driven my research and my desire to keep on writing about these things. I've written several articles for the Australian peer-reviewed Journal of Singing, which is called Australian Voice, and they're always related to this research. And how can we teach better? How can we communicate better? And so that's been the driving force for me. And it's not to say that I don't think that I'm no longer interested in the Alexander technique. Currently, where I'm teaching, I frequently catch myself, but even more so teachers who have no experience in the Alexander technique. And I'm often co-teaching with these teachers, and I can't say anything to them because of the situation, but I would love to. So, what if we rephrase that? What if we do this? What if we try that in a different way? Or, yeah, what are we actually doing here? Why are we in this classroom? Those kinds of things.
So, and I assume that's because You're the in a way, what you're wanting to bring to light is that these letters that you've read are a lot about how one teaches the Alexander
Exactly.
technique. And I guess you could create, tell me if you would agree with this. You could say very broadly, there are ways of teaching the technique, and I would say the more classical way of teaching, which, teachers will say they're teachers and we're teaching, but in reality, at least in my experience, a lot of it is actually a kind, almost therapeutic or verges on that. Whereas Marge, it was really clear that was not the case. I mean, she really, you got that right away with Marge.
Yeah,
She wanted
definitely.
to work with the way you were thinking. And she was very interested, maybe not explicitly, but implicitly in language. What words are you using when you're talking to your student, for example?
Exactly.
Not apart from what are you doing with your hands, if you are doing something with your hands, what are you thinking about, and what do you want to convey to your student? And I imagine that's the kind of thing you'd love to talk to some of your peers about when you're co-teaching, but can't, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean it obviously depends on the person who I'm teaching with, and some people are more open and interested in these kinds of things. Some people just aren't interested in how they do stuff. They're not that either. They're very young and they haven't had any ramifications of how they use themselves, or they just or the, well they I don't know, they don't care. So I can't make them care. But I was also just thinking about that you talking about therapeutic versus educational, and that also describes my trajectory through my professional trajectory. I started off studying medicine, and I got out of it because I realized that it wasn't where my passions really lay.
The ultimate therapeutic
Yeah,
process.
exactly. And so I moved out of that, but I still, I grew up in a medical family as well, so that has really been a very strong background. Science was my background. I mean, I did languages and I did art, and I studied music when I was at school and when I was a child. But that did color a lot of the early part of my adulthood, thinking as a scientist and as a training to be a medical practitioner. But I just realized that I was not excited about that enough. And I am excited about education. And I don't get tired of thinking about education, how to do it better. Sometimes I get tired of a specific type of content that I might be teaching, but I never get tired of that transaction and that the communication, how to communicate better. And I think that's just why I've been really fascinated with Marge and with Kathy's teaching as well, Kathy Madden, which
Right.
is the teacher from whom I learned a lot of Marge's approaches and thinking.
And these four people who we mentioned, Marjorie Barstow and Frank Pierce Jones, were both American teachers of the Alexander Technique. And I don't have never met Frank Pierce Jones, and he's died some time ago, but my sense is that, like Marge, he was very interested in how you communicated ideas, and I think how you could help people think in a more constructive way, to use Alexander jargon. And of course, Dewey, I mean, he was Mr. Education, and not just he wrote the introductions to three of Alexander's four books, and he was also a very well-known educator in the American first half of the 20th century in America, sometimes called the father of American public education. At FM, we don't really, we don't know exactly about FM in terms of how much he thought he was actually teaching or how much he was kind of fixing things. I mean, he made various statements at various times that could support either opinion. And I'm guessing he bounced around and, you know, was not as solidly in the education camp, let's say, as Marjan Frank was. More like what I would think most traditionally trained teachers are today. So, yeah, and so having the this information available in the book, which is really, it really does shed quite a different light on things in the Alexander world. So I would think that one reason why it's important is it clarifies that distinction with specific correspondence. What do people say to each other, about each other, et cetera, about other people in this group? And that maybe that would be really nice for students and teachers of the technique to know about.
Yeah, and I also write it, to go back to your original question, I also write it for people, anyone who's in the performing arts or who teaches in the performing arts, to really signal that the Alexander technique is still really useful and it's really practical. And it's vital, actually, if you're a performing artist. It's been, I've my impression is that the Alexander technique's kind of lost a bit of its presence in the performing arts, because there's so many new things that come up and everyone just wants to follow the latest, brightest, shiny object. And if it's not, you know, if it's more than 6 months old, it's old news and it can't be useful. But so that was also one of my aims in writing the book, to say this is really useful for us, me being a performing artist and teacher of music and singing, to say this is actually really a useful and vital part of what we do. Because I wasn't just writing, it wasn't just that I wanted to write a book about Marge, and I didn't just want to write about the Alexander technique. I wanted to also write it for performing artists to say, hi, it's still here and it still works. And this is also the way Marge taught it is actually a really good way to introduce it to students. I mean, if students want to go on and you know, learn about table work and chair work and all the words that Alexander used that many teachers keep on using. Sorry, I live next door to someone with a very loud motorbike. He'll be gone in a sec. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with those things. It's just that as a performing artist, I found the way Kathy taught to be so much, but it was a revelation, really, for me.
I was halfway through a training course in London when I encountered Marge, and it was a huge shock for me. I mean, it took me days to figure out how this fit in with what I had already learned and how it differed and so on. And I guess if you think in terms of performers who take Alexander lessons, and really for anybody, but particularly for performers, there's a really important distinction between a teacher who could help a violinist learn how to play the violin, knows the mechanics of it, knows a lot of stuff that could be really helpful for someone who wants to actually play the violin. A singing teacher, if they're good, knows a lot of stuff that could be helpful for a singer. But what they may lack is they know how to teach the topic, but they don't necessarily know how to teach the particular, teach people how they do the things they're learning from them.
Or yeah, or to address their underlying coordination and do something
Yeah,
about that.
that's what
Because
I mean.
often, in singing lessons, it's been very parts oriented or very technical, or like, say I could also have a lesson on just on interpreting a piece, although that's less common. What was a revelation for me was the way, and this is partly, this is again, I don't know exactly where the boundary is between Kathy's teaching and Marge's teaching, and how much of what Kathy does she got from Marge, and how much is her own and from somewhere else.
Sure.
But she manages to bring all of those things in together and keep thinking about the whole. And that's the bit that I like to write about for singing teachers, particularly. Because our profession is becoming incredibly parts oriented and technically oriented, mechanical, technical, and parts oriented. Like, we have workshops on the tongue, and we have workshops on these other tiny micro aspects of singing. And so I kind of see it as my mission to remind my profession that if you do think whole, often it's a much faster way of working and of solving problems than of drilling into this very micro, isolated part, which actually isn't isolated, but we treat it as if it's isolated, as if it's under a microscope. So that, coming out to the broader view and the whole person, and not even the whole person, but the whole situation of performing and, with co-performers and audiences and the real whole. It's actually much faster. In my experience, I've learned so much faster when that's been my what do I mean? My perspective, it's not the word I'm looking for, but my focus, I suppose, for want of a better word. Broad focus, like the constant, the broad focusing on the whole thing has been a faster way of working towards solving technical problems, which you might otherwise solve by going, let's look at the little part and solve that tiny problem.
Right, and
So often, if
maybe,
you stop micromanaging and think of the whole and the all
yeah.
of those things that I write chapters about, the desire and the social context and applying and the why and all of that. Things can often take care of themselves.
Right, and I like that you use that term micromanaging because that's I use that term all the time. I can think of two very broad reasons why you'd want to think in sort of holistic terms. One is that really everything in the body is connected with everything else. So you could do a workshop on the tongue, as as you suggested, and it might be kind of useful to really learn something about how the tongue works. But unless you understand that it's part of a bigger system and it is directly and or indirectly connected with all of your body, it's going to be a bit limiting. So that's one reason. And the other reason is, I think, that your conscious brain, which is the part of your brain that actually makes decisions and comes up with plans and learns about the tongue, right? It's your prefrontal cortex, which is a relatively small part of your brain. That's your conscious brain, and it's a fantastic, it's fantastic at coming up with plans and trying things out and experimenting and doing all the things we want to do. But what it is absolutely terrible at is micromanaging because it can't do it. It cannot It cannot micromanage more than a few things. It has very limited number of things that it can do. And you quickly get, if you keep adding things like, well, I got to think about my tongue and I got to think about this, very quickly,
Yes.
overloaded, and something else has to get pushed out. That whole the inability of your conscious brain to be any kind of a micromanager. It particularly, I think, I don't know, I wouldn't say maybe not particularly, but certainly for performers, they got plenty that this guy has to be considering. If you
Yeah.
know, the music, the conductor, the everything, and that's more than enough to fill up its memory slots.
Yeah.
And you can't tack on a bunch of other things without compromising the whole process. So you're kind of forced to think big if you really want to be effective. I think in terms of the whole body and be able to give instructions to the rest of your nervous system, the rest of your brain and your nervous system, what you want. And it does 99% of the work. It may not seem important to you because because you're not aware of it, but it's there and it's doing its thing. And that's something I don't know that Alexander ever talked explicitly about that, but once you start really thinking about things like Alexander technique directions and how to use them, you quickly realize that there's a limit to a very short limit to the number of things you can be thinking about at any point in time. And you've got to take that into account in terms of what you're going to do.
And it's, I mean, I'm also, ironically or paradoxically, I'm also a details person. Like that tends to be my skill, and that's possibly why this kind of teaching has been so helpful for me, because I do my natural tendency is to focus on detail, and so to have someone, which is what Kathy Madden does for me, is to remind me not just of my whole body, my whole self, and also and my entire environment. So that, because that is also impacts your on your overall coordination and how you're thinking about and going about your task, whatever that happens to be.
Yeah. And, performers, in a way, the issues that performers face is kind of the cutting edge of this issue. And it's the same issue everyone faces because, as Shakespeare said, what did he say? All the world's a stage, and we're just showing up to perform, right? So we're all performers, but true, the kind of performers we're talking about, they have that problem in addition to stage fright issues and the fact that most performers, the monetary rewards aren't that great. It's competitive in ways that are maybe not as much so for non-performers. So they have a lot to deal with. And for them, I think it's especially important that they have a sense of the wholeness of the situation they're in and have
Well, my
a way
experience
of
of
directing.
stage fright, as in my experience of what you're calling stage fright, is that it doesn't actually, it can't really exist if you are thinking of the whole. If you are thinking and relating to, and you have a plan for your whole coordination, your whole situation, that's the word I was looking for before, your whole situation and the social context and your artistic intention. The whole idea, I mean, I get quite frustrated seeing the other things I see are a lot of workshops about performance anxiety and that word and stage fright being overused, and people focusing on, like, my thesis is that one of my theses is that the more we focus on the detail, the more anxious we get about that detail, Whereas if you actually use a much broader lens and are aware of the whole, your whole, and again, I've written articles specifically about this. If anyone needs that, they're in Australian Voice, which is a peer-reviewed journal. In the last 4 years, I think I've published an article in that on these kinds of questions about a lot of the problems that get focused on, like those words I was just talking about, don't even really exist if you are coordinated with yourself and with the whole situation.
Right, right. Yeah, exactly. So how, let's talk about Alexander teachers a little bit, because I would guess that the majority of Alexander teachers and trainees are working within the more traditional approach to the work, that although Marge's teaching is certainly getting a lot better known these days.
Yeah.
What do you think, how is it helpful for them to learn about this history and this whole stuff that we've been talking about the last five interviews?
Another one of my aims was to provide a record of what actually happened last century and who played what role and who said what and who believed what, because in my reading I found so many wrong assumptions, misinterpretations, basically rubbish that had been talked about Marge. Mm-hmm. And I kind of wanted to set the record straight and say, look here, this is what she wrote, this is what Frank Pierce Jones wrote. I mean, one of the stories I heard, for example, was that Marge got into group teaching because when Frank Pierce Jones was starting to stumble in the 1970s because of his brain tumor, he asked Marge to take a class for him. So the implication was she was some kind of relief teacher for Frank, who came in and went, oh, wow, teaching in groups is really cool. Marge started teaching in groups in the 1940s, and she was in conversation with Frank Pierce Jones about this for decades. It wasn't Frank's idea. I mean, I wouldn't even say necessarily, well, actually, I'm almost certain it was Marge's idea. It doesn't mean Frank Pierce Jones also had the same idea on his own, but she didn't just pick up his pieces and go, oh, this is actually something that Frank invented. So those kinds of things. Yeah, I can't remember what your question was now.
Well, you know, with people who are teaching, who are in the more classic environment of the Alexander technique. But, you know, in terms of group teaching, in terms of group teaching large groups over a period of several days, I think Marge received an invitation to go to a university in Texas sometime in the maybe late 60s or early 70s. And she said, she writes about it in one of her preface to one version of Use of the Self, that she said, I had never actually done that before, but I'm going to go down there. She hopped on a Greyhound bus, and I'm just going to go with it. And it's remarkably similar, her wording in that preface, to what Alexander said happened to him in Melbourne, where someone asked him to teach a bunch of theology students, female theology students, 20 or so. And he said to the person, the director of that school, well, I've never done that before, but if you're willing to let it happen, I'm willing to give it a try. And then he says, you know, I'm really glad I did it. But I think that one of the differences between Alexander and Marge might have been that Alexander was probably not as comfortable doing that, or maybe not even as skilled at doing that as Marge was. I don't know. I mean, I don't want to, it's all ancient history, so who knows? But they both had this kind of, and I'm sure Frank Pierce Jones too, had this willingness to try something new and see what happens. And I think that's a big message for teachers today. I mean, the whole Alexander world has just come out of COVID, where and this years ago, or say 3 or 4 years ago, group teaching, oh, sorry, online teaching was really looked down upon. And there were very few of us who were doing it, and it was regarded as just almost heretical to do that. Well, within a year or two, some of the most ardent enemies of group teaching were group teaching and were saying good things about it. Oh, I never imagined I could do so much, So that kind of openness to trying new things, I think Marge and in his own way, Alexander and Frank Pierce Jones were all a bit oriented in that direction in different ways. And I think a lot of teachers today maybe aren't quite so eager to try new things. Or I don't
Yeah, I
know.
don't know.
I
I've had
can't
quite a
really
few
say
teachers
that
who
with
aren't.
assurance.
Yeah, I don't know. I'd have to.
Yeah, but I've seen some pretty strong resistance to new things from, corresponding with teachers and so on.
Good.
So, anything else you'd like to add, kind of about that would.
Yeah, for some reason I just feel like I want to reiterate the fact that one of my main kind of one of the things that really drove me to continue and complete the job was this sense of injustice that I felt. I just felt like Marge had so much bad press and so many wrong things said about her, and even like nasty, bitchy things. And it just made me, I didn't know her, of course, and I know she wasn't a saint. But when I see the things that she actually did say, I've watched her on video, I saw things she actually wrote, I've read her letters. She's just a phenomenal woman, whatever her faults and wherever those nasty things that people said came from. And so I don't know, I just wanted there to be a record, a formal authoritative record of her work in the 20th century. And actually, one thing that really touched me, my aunt is a writer, and she went out and bought the book, which was really kind because I didn't have any spares to give anyone in my family. She went and bought the book, and one of the things she wrote to me was when she started reading it, she read the beginning, and she wanted to give me this compliment that I had she felt that I had conveyed Marjorie Bastow's voice in the book, and she got a lump in her throat from and she just thought, wow, I want to know this woman. And it was just one of the best compliments that I've had. Because that's what I think my aunt does as well. She writes so beautifully. Her writing voice is so beautiful. So to get that compliment from her that I had somehow brought Marge to someone who'd never heard of her. My
Right.
aunt has never done any Alexander technique, is not a
From
performer. And
reading
she got
excerpts,
that from reading my book.
from
So
reading
thanks.
some of the excerpts of her letter. Marge was an amazingly good writer. Ex amazingly good writer. She could, you could give her a little piece that you'd written, say, about her, about the technique, and she would find just the right change to make here. And she
And
didn't
she did that with Frank Pierce Jones as well. I also wanted it to be known that Frank Pierce Jones's book is really famous in the Alexander world,
Right.
and Marge helped him write about the Alexander
Oh,
technique.
really? Yeah.
I'm sorry to have to go. I have an appointment, so I have to
Well, let's
finish.
just leave it at that. I just want to just make a final little pitch for Maybe you can hold up your copy. The sun is overtaking me here in Nebraska. It's like, I can't help but notice. Yeah, there we go. That you're always dressed very warmly with mittens and stuff, and I'm wearing short sleeve shirts. It's summer here and winter where you are. Anyway, so I want to thank you for
Thanks, Robert.
doing all
Duncan.
these interviews. And
Okay.
okay, thank you for doing all the
Talk to you
interviews.
again soon.
And we'll just leave it at that.
Thanks, Robert.
Take care. Bye bye.
Bye.